So I want to start with when I was at school, I went to a school that that had the motto "Speculum sine macula." Now you can imagine for a teenage girl that really didn't mean a lot. And the translation of it was "mirror without spot." So we had a school song, as you do, and so forth. And in those days, it was really taught to us as being about purity. And yes, we didn't spend too much time on it. We just sang the school song and all those things that you do, try to live good lives and so on. But it wasn't until I read this article by Beatrice that I really began to savour what this actually means. And I took the liberty of ringing the current principal of the Academy of Mary Immaculate, and I asked her, was the school motto still the same? Because I was trying to imagine teenage girls today with a motto of mirror without spot. And she said, yeah, mirror without blemish. She said, I don't really know what to do with it, but I haven't been game to change it, seeing as how we're the oldest school in Melbourne. And anyway, I sent her this article. So this article by Beatrice is really picking up a lot of the material that Kerry shared with us. And she's talking about that image of the Immaculate Conception. And whatever we think with that, she goes through what we can tend to think the Immaculate Conception is. And so many people think it's about Mary giving birth to Jesus without any male help, according to the myth. So she dispels that myth, but she calls it the Immaculate Conception, our original face. And it's dear Beatrice Brutot who unravels this or unwraps it a bit. Again, she's using terminology that is just so right for her, some of which we may not identify with, but I wanted just to put to you a little bit of what she says. So we know that the Immaculate Conception concept goes back to the story and the reality of Mary's apparition to Bernadette at Lourdes. And it was the story of Bernadette really wanted to know who this beautiful woman was, and she asked what her name is. And the woman does not reveal her name until quite late in the apparitions. And she says, I am the Immaculate Conception. But then the other part of it that we might miss, but which is probably one of the main features of Lourdes today, is this, when she says, wash in the stream and drink of it. Now, when she says that, and those who know the story well will know, that Bernadette looked around and there was no stream. So it was indicated that she should start digging beneath the grotto, beneath the rocks where this woman had appeared. And she started to dig with her hands. And as she did, a small stream of water started to bubble up, and it bubbled up and bubbled up, and it's become a very large stream. I've never been to Lourdes, but we know that it has had countless healings from on the part of those who've washed in that stream. So Beatrice takes these two words really to Bernadette, I am the Immaculate Conception, wash in the stream and drink of it. And this is something of what she comes up with. And this is my interpretation of it, my reflection on it. So words strung together, really. The lady and the spring, sacred images, together revealing hidden meaning. Lady and spring, double icon of the purity and unity of life at the center of things. Lady and Spring, icons evoking new vision, raised to consciousness, bringing healing. Lady and Spring, paradigms revealing secret truth for us. Their power released in discovering their secret message, the message of our true origins. So again, this is tapping into something of what Kerry was putting before us yesterday about that place deep within that is the place of our true origins. And she called it the place of the natural face. And of course, Beatrice, who had a lot to do with Eastern religions, and she picks up on the image of the original face, which is a Buddhist concept. And she says that our spiritual task is to find the point within ourselves where we are the Immaculate Conception, our original unblemished nature, our original face. So she speaks of, in the article, she speaks of the language of I am the Immaculate Conception, evoking the language of John's Gospel and Jesus saying, I am the resurrection and the life. I am all those other things that were I am statements. And she points out that when we hear those sorts of statements, we are drawn into the archetypal. And again, we recall Kerry talking about that beautiful mystical rose and the second level of that viewing of the rose is where the petals are moving from separateness, slowly folding in. And she described that place as the archetypal place, the place of the archetypes, but folding in to the unity of place even deeper. So Beatrice is really pointing out that we're using an archetypal language here. So let's view it as archetype. And let's be aware that that Immaculate Conception place, if we can call it a place or reality, is our original unblemished nature. It's still within us as our original face. And we know that many years ago, was it the 70s or the 80s, when Matthew Fox got into a lot of trouble for talking about original blessing, when the more important thing was original sin. So Immaculate Conception juxtaposed with original sin and all that we've been taught and all that probably most, if not all of us, well, most of us certainly had emphasized in our religious education in earlier years, this original sin, this big black thing on our souls that needed to be got rid of. It was taught as a hereditary condition of hurt, of sinfulness. But the way these words that Beatrice is using about it bring a slightly different nuance, a distortion, impeded life. She's describing original sin as impeded life. And as a chain reaction, as a tendency towards evil, that's there from the beginning. That was the teaching. It's there right at the beginning. We were born in original sin. She's talking about Immaculate Conception is prior to that. So sin and all the teaching around sin follows on from that. Sin, impediment, and this is Beatrice putting her take on it, impediment to essential unity, to deeper life, an inherited state perpetuated by us. sin, separation from God, separation from free-flowing, spontaneous self-sharing, separation from immortal life, from our unself-conscious essential unity, meaning that self is separated from that place where self is the yardstick of everything. Sin, that which divides the unbroken field into two, that sets up polarity, breeds opposition. So again, here we see some of what Kerry was doing with us yesterday about that consciousness that is rampant in our world today, that works by distinctions, polarities, and opposition. Sin, based on alienation, on otherness. You are not me. You are not like me, like us. Therefore, you are other, and you are to be persecuted, even killed. Is based on alienation, otherness, on division, on separation, on estrangement. Sin, rising from duality and self-consciousness. I am the yardstick. And we can see that all around us at the moment, certainly down this way in Victoria with, the coronavirus. It's judging myself and what's best for self. Original sin, foundation for all sins that follow. And then in juxtaposed with this, we have immaculate conception, the state of being free from what Beatrice calls the crystallizations that hold us in bondage to alienation and self-division. So this state within us, it really frees us from these crystallizations. Then she moves on to talk about what we must deal with, the Adam and Eve story, which is really the basis of all our original sin theology. Adam and Eve, a sacred myth, projecting back, explaining the story of this beginning, the story of discovery, that first discovery of division, of disunity, of learning to judge with self as yardstick. She talks in the article too about the fact that all religious traditions, Christian and otherwise, have their sacred origins, stories, their myths. And many of them coincide in many ways. So this is our story from our Hebrew Christian tradition. But then the discovery, and she points out that alienation is not the deepest aspect of our being. There's something deeper. So something exists deep within, something more fundamental to who we are. And that is unimpaired unity. Still present and still available. So this is the focus of this beautiful article, talking about and accessing, trying to access this place of unimpaired unity that is still there and the need to trust that. So Mary's I am the Immaculate Conception. I am the one with the single I. And we can translate that I as EYE or I, as Kerry was pointing out and as Beatrice points out, that I. And Meister Eckhart, the I with which we look on God is the same I with which God looks on me. For us. So this immaculate conception place. He's full of grace, full of light. And it is an archetype that is still present in me, held deep within us all. So it's still present in all of us. It's our true selfhood. I think yesterday Kerry was referring to this as personhood. It's our true selfhood, personhood. It is undivided unity, uncontaminated wholeness, beyond all distortion. And how wonderful to really trust that that place is still there. And I think we know it when we come into the contemplative space. We know it individually. And I'm always really taken when we contemplate together. It's like we touch this wholeness in the whole as well as within ourselves. And it's like moving down into the center of that rose where the oneness is. And you can actually, and I'm sure that you would have experienced it yesterday, you can sense it at any time that you contemplate with others. So she explores this further, and I reflect on her exploring. This essential place within is always there. It's the nadir point beyond all other points. At the place from whence I am, my me-ness rises from the ground of the great I am. So it's within this ground that my small, except that's a comparison anyway, but the sense of my personhood arises from that ground. This precious point, and again, Kerry referred to this yesterday, is Merton's Point Vierge, the virgin point, the central point of the soul, the Buddhist original face, the locus of human union with the divine. And I just share with you, just refresh your memory, probably for most of you, if not all, but just in case there are some people in the group who don't know this beautiful quote by Merton, where he's talking about the true self, which is this same point. And he says this, at the center of our being is a point of nothingness that is untouched by sin and by illusion. It's a point of pure truth, a point or spark which belongs entirely to God, which is never at our disposal, from which God disposes our lives, which is inaccessible to the fantasies of our mind or the brutalities of our own will. This little point of nothingness and of absolute poverty is the pure glory of God in us. It is like a pure diamond, blazing with the invisible light of heaven. It is in everyone. And if we could see it, we would see these billions of points of light coming together in the face and blaze of a sun that would make all the darkness and cruelty of life vanish completely. This is the same point that Beatrice is talking about. She refers to this point of points as the umbilicus, the source of inflowing life, the join of parent and child, the interface with what transcends the boundaries of our humanity. Yet it is our truest, deepest self. And she mentions contemplating our navel, which is often a derogatory term in our context. But she says we contemplate our navel truly as we attend to this bodily symbol of the mysterious connection which was our beginning. And what a beautiful thing to do, to actually contemplate our navel by holding that place, which in the chakra system is actually where I hold my sense of self. And it's often the most wounded place, the wounded chakra that we have that requires a lot of inner work to free. But it's interesting that she's referring to this as this connection point between parent and child, between the divine and the human. It's the immaculate conception place, not just Mary, but it's our unflawed beginning, still present and functioning within my own, yet our shared paradise. So she calls this our paradise within. And again, going back to the Adam and Eve story, the Garden of Eden. So then she moves on to talking about paradise myths. They tell stories of a time before the world began, stories of original bliss and beauty, of unity and harmony, stories of living our original face before ever our parents were born, as the Buddhists put it. Paradise myths, telling stories of the moment of primordial splitting, after which nothing ever was the same. Duality came into being. Stories of when the macula first appears, the spot, which interrupts original unity. Yet original unity remains deep within. Original unity cannot not exist. An eternal truth held in our core, yet known in some intuitive way. In some way we do know this is there. And I was reflecting on this yesterday during the break from morning tea. And I'm thinking, well, reflecting on how this knowing, you know it's there because it gets awakened. And it can be awakened by what Richard Rohr calls the spiritual teacher, you know, the one who can awaken in you what you already know, but gives it a new face maybe, or a way of understanding it. So, and what we feel, what we experience, that many of you shared yesterday in your creative sharings, and that was this movement of the heart-mind, as it was called, this movement within. It's that intuitive knowing, even when I may think that my prayer is all over the place, there's this knowing that there's something deeper than all over the place. The macula affecting all of our seeing, helping us separate, distinguish, clarify what is blurred. As I was reflecting on this, I was thinking the macula is really important in our eyes, and it helps us to see clearly, to distinguish things. And it's the source of our 20/20 vision if we're lucky enough to have that. And I thought, well, it doesn't sound like a bad thing, as it's almost being described here. But then the awareness came that this beautiful ability to separate, distinguish, clarify, analyze, we can go on with a lot more of those beautiful masculine descriptions, which are attributed often to the sacred masculine, that they in themselves can blind us to intuitive knowing of hidden truths. So the clarifications, the distinctions, the trying to put words and language on things can actually blind us to this deeper knowing, this being in touch with the deeper and feeling inadequate, not being able to put clear words on it. And so the beauty of the artistic, which is beyond words, and some of those beautiful sharings of yesterday, the images, the mandalas, the symbols of the flower, the flowers, the music, all of those are intuitive ways of knowing. And when we touch those and bring them in to the clarity, then we have wholeness. She then speaks about icons, and she's saying that the lady and the stream are icons. They're reminding us of what we know in some unconscious way, like an icon, that Rublev's icon of the Trinity, or the three angels who visited Abraham, reminding us of what lies deep in our psyche. So it's deep down there, truths lost sight of by distinctions. And when we try, we probably don't spend too much time trying to think about the Trinity, because we can't think it. And that's trying to use the macula to distinguish. But it's actually inviting us to sink down into the depth place of the mystical rose, or the depth place of the heart, because that's where we know. Icons calling to our deeper consciousness, testifying to concealed truths, drawing us to the hidden paradise towards which they point. So icons point towards something. They're not the reality, but they remind us and touch into that deep place of knowing. Immaculate conception, icon of the interface between us and the divine. And Beatrice describes this as the icon becomes intercessor for us of this hidden truth. Truth we cannot wholly grasp. And we know this aspiration we were taught. We have the immaculate conception, the image there, the icon, and we have the intercession, the intercessor, O Mary conceived without sin, something we were taught, pray for us who have recourse to thee. That prayer that we were taught long ago, but seeing it now in a whole new light. Icons appearing as something separate to us, outside of us, and yet we reach inward towards them as to some inner paradise, lost to us, but dimly grasped. We sense it, we intuit it, as present in some mysterious realm, some locked chamber of secrets, for us to find the key. In this secret place within each of us and all of us together, there lies the lost memory of the immaculate conceptions we are. Its truth, their truths, now lost to us, but we sense it there, deep within the interface of human and divine. We sense its presence. We intuit it. We sink into it when we contemplate. We sink into it sometimes when we have an in-depth conversation with someone who helps us touch that place within. It lies at the spiritual navel, at the sacred place untouched by sin or by illusion. And Beatrice refers to the untouched by sin as the way we in the West refer to this sin place. But the East, Buddhism, would refer to it as illusion. It's all illusion. From this sacred center deep within our being, deep within all being, there flows our precious, unself-conscious, original life. Life from the source, a clear, pure spring of living water. And here she links the Immaculate Conception with the spring of life that flows from it. Water which heals, purifies, and makes whole. All that was broken or encrusted, in whose flow we find the paradise lost to us, we find our original face. And within the article, she invites us into a beautiful meditative journey. And I'm going to invite Robin now. I'll leave this image on the screen. You may not need that. You might just show Robin's words. But she's going to lead us into that spiraling down place. And so I'll hand over to her.
Thanks, Madeline. Yes, this is a beautiful meditation in the article that Beatrice invites us actually to pray often. And there's so much happening in it. It's based on this famous Zen koan, show me your original face, the face you had before your parents were born. And she invites us into an imaginative journey to deepen this expression of our original face. And I think many of us will have often cried out the cry of the mystics, let me see you face to face. And Kerry's interpretation yesterday, perhaps face in face. And so there's no object anymore of the face of God. So it's a coinciding of my face in the face of the beloved. And Beatrice wants us to imaginatively move from that place of our human nature, as she calls it, where my whole consciousness and gaze is turned inwards, to my personhood, as Madeline said, where when my gaze is turned outwards, I soon see that which I gaze upon is my beloved gazing upon me. And so we have this wonderful dissolution of the subject-object dichotomy and all these negations that are so violent into the I-I consciousness. And so we see from oneness, from free-flowing oneing. And so this meditation, as Madeline said, offers us a taste, a beautiful taste. And we'll go for about 15 minutes, and then we'll have some silence at the end, and then I'll chime a bell. So once again, we come together into the beautiful oneing silence together as a community. And so I invite you again to be comfortable. And whatever that involves for you, please now tend to the body. So if you want to lie down or just move anything that feels it needs to be helped to really be comfortable. And then just begin by releasing your breath all of the way out. And if it takes a few breaths to do that, that's fine, but just let the breath release completely and naturally and hold nothing back. And as we notice with each full out-breath, we start to relax, so letting the body now be utterly relaxed as you release the breath, tension in the body, all thoughts, allowing your breath to release your awareness to vivid awareness of your body, utter presence of your body breathing. And then just allowing your awareness now in this vividness of the body to go down to the feet and notice all sensations in the feet. Perhaps you can feel life pulsing or tingling or a complete absence, and all are sensations. And then letting your awareness follow whatever sensation you are present to from your feet through your legs to the hips, to the lower torso, and letting the lower torso ground you even more deeply in the body, in the earth. And it's still in the vividness of your body, or the absence of vividness, both still sensations and both still awareness, bringing your awareness to your fingertips. Whatever sensations are there in your fingertips, just noticing them. And then your arms, your chest rising and falling, releasing all control of your breath. So the chest simply rises, simply falls, feeling life's energy pulsing in however that feels for you, now in the chest, in the body, allowing the awareness now to move to the head, being aware of all sensations, and then to the life in your face. Relaxing any tension in your face. Allowing your face to soften. Feeling the life in your face. Being aware of the breath flowing through the nostrils. The breath at the tip of the nostrils. At the doorway of your body. Just following the breath as it arrives in through the doorway, through the face. Allowing the breath to carry you, hold you, enfold you, move you. And now slowly retrace your lifetime, retracing through the years of your maturity, your middle age, as a young adult, a youth, a child, a baby in your mother's womb, your conception. Leave all thoughts behind. Release all attachments to memories, to descriptions. Let the flow of your breath hold your awareness as you notice what happens to all the descriptions and qualities by which you identify and situate yourself. What happens as all these qualities are stripped away, when you are no more than a blob of protoplasm? Who and what are you now? Feel your desire to be released of identifying with any of these stages or states. Not looking at time, but seeing through time. Sinking deeper into this ground of your being. Now let us retire in this backward journey, feeling life energy carrying you further back into the body of your parents who produced you, into the bodies of your parents, and then into the bodies of their parents, retracting to the eggs and the sperms from which they were formed. And who and what are you now? What face do you have at that point before your parents themselves were born? And now let yourself release even more deeply to free fall into this place where there are no interruptions, continuous flow, and settle your awareness here. And I invite you to ever so gently now to stabilize in your breath, to stabilize in this ground of your being. To gently stay here. And if you leave it through the day, just come back. And even more, to let yourself marvel at where you have been.
Thank you, Robin, for leading us in that beautiful journey inward, downward, roundward, into that beautiful, amazing place of groundless ground, really. So this was the journey we've just been on, an imaginative journey, retracing our lifeline through maturity, through youth and childhood, through prenatal gestation to conception, slowly letting go of all descriptions, qualities, characteristics and identifications. One by one, they're stripped away and we become a mass of protoplasm. Beyond this, egg and sperm, and beyond again to the bodies of our parents, and they to their parents. And it's only when we're in this deep, deep place that a breakthrough can happen, says Beatrice. Realization dawns that because this mirror is empty, empty of descriptions, categories, all those things we were invited to let go of, because the mirror is empty, it can reflect all that is shown it. It is one smooth, continuous flow. The mirror, now empty of all otherness, is able to reflect faithfully all that is shown, simply, spontaneously, devoid of compartments, contrasts, distinctions, defining barriers. All that inhibits the free flow of spontaneous life. And as we worked into that meditation, the question, who am I? Who did I find myself to be? Who are we? What are we at the end of all this stripping away? This emptying of descriptions and factual categories. If any self remains at all, it is a pure point of existence, an absolute empty mirror. Bliss fills our consciousness again, says Beatrice. The disciple returns to the master with the original face shining in every glance and gesture. This immaculate, spotless nature, our real self, obscured and hidden from us by delusions and ignorance. yet like the concealed underground spring, awaiting its uncovering once our true being is released to view. And this all lies, says Beatrice, at the spiritual navel, at the sacred place, untouched by sin or by illusion, from whence flows unself-conscious, original life. Life from the source, a clear, pure spring of living water, water which heals and purifies and makes whole ourselves and all who come in contact with us. It heals all that was broken or encrusted, in whose flow we find the paradise lost to us. We find our original face. In this utterly empty, pure, simple, true self place, this place of our original face, of our immaculate conception, there is nothing to prove or to conceal, nothing to be other than what that self is. And in the profound poverty and simplicity of this sacred inward place, the self is free to give all, allowing life to give itself away fully and completely. The Lady and the Spring, icons of the truth about us. When we can truly see this beyond any macula, we know most surely, as Merton also said, that the gate of heaven is everywhere. And we never knew it. The Immaculate Conception, our original face. Beatrice Bruteau, thank you. And so the article that gives much more detail than this is being or has been emailed to each of you. And we were wanting to allow time now, if you would like to either scan through or read or not read. You may not need to. You may wish to just stay in some place that you had taken during that reflective time. But we're allowing now from morning tea, which we'll move into shortly, from there till 11:30, which is a good hour. So feel free to do whatever you would like to do or need to do with that. And maybe it's just sitting in that beautiful place of our original face, Immaculate Conception, of the true self. And then at 11:30, if you return, and Robin will put you into groups, and it's just really, again, to do it reflectively, spending some minutes, up to 5 minutes at the beginning before you start, just so that you settle into the group space. And then to, if someone would just keep that time, and if someone would start some, whatever sharing comes to you out of that, what was it that moved me in my heart, mind, place, as Kerry referred to? What was it that touched me most? Where did I go to in that? I might have been somewhere completely different to what the article was about because something was triggered in me. So just if you're willing to share, again, just trying to be sensitive to how many people are in the groups and just to allow time for each to be able to share with a brief pause at the end to really take in what each person said. It's contemplative sharing. And then you will be brought back. There'll be an indication a couple of minutes before, as you're used to. We'll return at 12 o'clock and for some large group sharing. And then when there's no need to move any further with that, we'll then move to lunch. It's a fairly flexible time because we do need to come back to do something this afternoon. So it may be a 1 o'clock lunch or it may be earlier. So if we can just move with that gently, let's go to morning tea. Or do whatever you need to do. Go for a walk. Pick a flower. Do a painting. Do a collage. But you could begin something that you might want to finish with the time this afternoon, a little bit of time after lunch. And Robin is still happy to receive anything you may want to share of your expressive creative endeavours. Do you have anything you wanted to say on that, Robin, or not? You need to unmute.
I'll just pop my email onto the chat again, and just a very warm invitation because what's coming through is utterly beautiful. So thank you.
I just told that the article has now been sent, so you may like to, if you would like to look at it, just check your emails. Thank you. Have a lovely morning tea or whatever you need to do.
Welcome back, everyone. And I'll hand you over to Robin, who will be putting us into small groups.
So, Michelle, would you like me to just send everyone off? Yeah. So welcome back, everybody. It's lovely to see all our faces together again. And the rooms are set up. And Madeline has given us our process. So we'll come back at 12 and I'll send a two-minute breakout room closing message just before 12. So many blessings. I'm just going to assign you, Kevin. I won't be one sec. sorry about this. 13. Tess, are you stuck? Tess. Hi.
Hello.
Oh, hold on, I'll just check I'm off. Yes.